This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. I don't recall any specific class in school dedicated to the development of my character. That probably explains a lot. It was a different time, and I think that my character was formed by the example and expectations of my parents, a few key teachers, and the norms of society. But Martin Luther King Jr. said that intelligence plus character is the goal of true education. I don't believe he was necessarily talking about classroom education, but that's where the building blocks of character can now be found. The Student Citizen Act of 2001 requires every local board of education in North Carolina to develop and implement character education instruction, affirming that the development of character in children is the cornerstone of education. It is, in fact, the cornerstone of our society, and if the purpose of education is to prepare people to live productive lives in a system that depends on them to be good, informed citizens and leaders, character development is a necessity. But what do you teach, and how do you teach it? And since 2001, what has been the impact of official character education? To get answers to those questions, we've invited three people involved in various forms of character education to join us. Deborah Kaslick is Director of Arts, Health, Physical Education, and Curriculum Support Programs, which includes character development initiatives for Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
Also with us is Susan Grabowski, the founder of Young Elites. That's a young women's leadership campaign, which we'll talk about as we go through the program. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let me see if I can put you on the right microphone. There we go. Good morning.
Good morning.
Both these women are in our Spirit Square studio, and joining us by phone is Dr. Deborah Acker, Assistant Director for the General Hugh Shelton Leadership Center at North Carolina State University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, I understand, I think I mentioned this in the opening minute, which we didn't hear in the studio, but I understand that there's also a federal mandate for character education to be taught in schools. How does that intertwine, if it does at all, with the North Carolina law?
It really does not. I mean, we have, from the jurisdiction of the state, so the federal guidelines have really not dictated to states what they have to do for character education. So our local mandate is what we follow.
Did the federal mandate precede the 2001 North Carolina law, or was North Carolina ahead of the game?
North Carolina was ahead of the game. And most states were. Most states took on the actual application of character education.
And why did they decide that was needed back in 2001?
I think, you know, as we have unfunded mandates, it becomes more of a challenge, as we also go to high-stakes testing and, look at implementation of Common Core and things that we need to do and accomplish in education, that sometimes, the character education and elective classes that drive a lot of the components of character education are minimized to meet the standards for what we have to meet.
How did we used to do this? Back in the, the 70s, the 60s. How did we used to teach character, or did we?
Well, I think, a lot of times our values, religion, our culture, our ethnicity, all drove those kinds of things. And as our society has changed, with more technology influence and things like that, it has really created a lot of challenges for us for face-to-face social development. A lot of working families, minimal time with one another face-to-face. But to be able to bring those back into our lives is an important component to be able to find a balance and be intentional about what we're doing.
We're going to talk about Young Elites, which is a private organization that has a week-long session, I think, or several week-long sessions on character building, particularly, and leadership, particularly for young women. But what led you, why did you see the need to start this?
It was a friend of mine, Jennifer Shiley, and myself. We are co-founders. And it was really last year, so this is really new. And it was tested last year, and so this year we've spent a whole year, and this will be our first year that we had fully developed and will roll out the program fully. And we have 80 girls that are going to be able to be in the program that we can fully fund. It is free to them, so they don't have even a registration fee right now.
Why did you see the need?
We saw the need. Young Elites is a leadership program, so it's solely to build leadership in young women. Mm-hmm. Women are coming out into the workforce, and we're half the population, and we need to be prepared just as everyone. So they're saying in colleges that they're not seeing us prepared, not seeing women prepared. And colleges are now bringing leadership programs and building them, but it's really because it's not happening in high school. So we saw the need, and we are now doing it.
And Deborah Acker, I'll ask you the same question. The Hugh Shelton Leadership Center at NC State, how long has it been in operation, and why did it start?
Sure. When General Shelton was retiring from the Joint Chiefs of Staff for our nation, he wanted to give something back to his alma mater, NC State University. And he, through his experiences internationally and across the states, was just seeing a need for developing the next generation of leaders. And he was born and raised in a small town, Speed, and in North Carolina, and he just felt like it was his values, his upbringing, that really allowed him that opportunity to go the distance of what he was able to accomplish in his military career and now working with corporate and beyond. And so we really looked at what were those cornerstones. And so in 2002, this center, now it originally was an initiative for the university, started, but we will actually be going in for the Youth Shelton Challenge. This will be our 11th year. And so we really focus on honesty, integrity, compassion, social responsibility, and diversity. So that really is how it started, but it was really more of the vision from General Shelton and Ms. Shelton of just really wanting to invest in that next generation of leaders to equip them to be able to do all that they can do despite where they come from.
And for those who don't remember or don't know, General Hugh Shelton is the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, so he reached the highest levels of leadership in his career. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in his I Have a Dream speech, mentioned the content of a person's character. I'd like to hear a definition. What is character?
I think character is an integrity, acting when nobody's looking. The social responsibility that Debbie brought up is something that I think is very significant, but I think it's also based on personal experience.
And although we do have leaders whose character is dubious,
correct,
it is ideal to have a leader whose character is not. So what kinds of character qualities are you trying to instill in the young women who will be coming to you?
We use acronyms for ELITE. So it's excellence, leadership, initiative, tenacity, and execution. And we instill those throughout the week into the girls. And each day we work through those. And it culminates throughout the week.
Yeah.
And so,
Dr. Acker, you mentioned a whole list of things a minute ago when you were talking about what you teach, and they sound not unlike what the State Board of Education Character Education Handbook emphasizes, traits such as respect, responsibility, integrity, and they add citizenship to that.
Right.
How do you define citizenship?
Well, I think it goes along with selfless service and giving to your local community. And that's really, we believe that leadership is looking beyond self, and that you're doing it more as a servant leader versus what is my personal agenda,
mm-hmm,
and what am I going to get out of it, but what, how are you serving those around you? And that's really, I believe in the years that I've known the Sheltons, that is how he's lived his life. He hasn't thought about what is he going to get out of it, but anything that he did in his career and thought was best, he would practice it first, or he would do it first before he would put it beyond others. And so really thinking beyond self of what is, with all the stakeholders that are going to be impacted by this, what is the best solution and how are you going to bring people to the table to make that the best it can be for the community.
Since that phrase, integrity and citizenship, came from the State Board of Education Character Development Handbook, or whatever it's called, how do you define for the students citizenship?
Much the same as Debbie just discussed. One of the things is, you know, the intrinsic values. You know, we do things because we care. We do things because they make us feel good inside. You know, for me to develop empathy becomes very important. You know, so that's all part of that whole citizenship piece.
Are these concepts, that empathy, caring, being a good person even when somebody's not watching, are these foreign concepts to a lot of these young people?
I think more and more they're becoming that way, you know, just because of, as you mentioned before, the role models that we have, you know, in, you know, our sports world. Sometimes they don't show, you know, the best of the best. You know, so as we as adults, you know, look at what we're doing, we really need to take a look at how we're rewarding our young folks. You know, so if my reward is coming from, you know, if I'm asked to clean the house or to do a chore, for example, what am I going to get out of it? You know, the intrinsic part of that would be, you know, I've contributed to our family, you know, in making something look nice, right? And there's a reward for that. The other part of that is I'm cleaning this up so that, you know, I get money for it, or, you know, I'm working towards, you know, getting my iPhone or my iPad, where, you know, we're actually rewarding with materialistic goods.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Deborah Acker, you're working with high school people. Is that what you're working? Is that who you're working with?
That for our youth camp that we serve rising 9th through 12th graders. So that is correct. We do work with younger populations as well as professionals. But for our camp, it is basically 14 to 18.
And with young elites, you're working with high school age.
Yes. And along the lines of that, too, is each girl, we ask them what leadership is, or what a leader is, what's the characteristics of a leader. So they write an essay, a short essay. So each one writes on that. And it's interesting. They all have a perspective on it, mm-hmm. and they're all right, and they're all good. And you come to find out that's really the kind of leader they want to be.
So when you said a few minutes ago that you started this organization because businesses are discovering that young women are not properly prepared.
Colleges are identifying that girls
are not properly prepared. Are they not properly prepared to be leaders?
Correct.
Because it sounds like they have an idea of what character is, but they don't know how to put that into action as a leader. Is that what you're saying?
Even specifically, a mentor of ours, a college close by, she's an athletic director in a college, and she's been helpful in mentoring our programs, has said that she gets the athletes in, and she's not finding that they can be the leaders. And they see there's a gap. They see it's not happening. They don't have the skills and the tool sets to be leaders.
And the schools, the public schools, are not necessarily concentrating on developing leaders, but they are concentrating on developing good citizens. But many citizens want to become leaders. So is it at all part of the program?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, not all of us can be leaders, but mm-hmm. all of us can be collaborative partners.
Yeah.
You know, in driving, you know, social development and, you know, caring environments.
So where are young women missing are they missing a chapter someplace in this education that public schools provide?
I mean, I think it's just cultural. You know,
right.
Cultural, you know, we're you know, fighting the cultural norms, you know, of what women should be, you know, in the workplace.
And a leader doesn't mean you have to be the CEO of a company. So you can be a leader and still not be a CEO.
That's Susan Grabowski, who's founder of Young Elites. Also with us, Deborah Kaslick, director of curriculum support for CMS, and Deborah Acker with NC State. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Morningstar Marinas, with three locations on Lake Norman, full-service marinas offering customer service and amenities designed around the boating lifestyle. Information at morningstarmarinas.com. Get ready for higher taxes, at least if City Manager Ron Carley and if the interim county manager Bobby Shields get their way. We're going to find out on Monday why Ron Carley feels that the city needs to raise taxes for new construction projects, things like that. And the interim county manager, Bobby Shield, will also join us to explain why the county has a straightforward choice, in their opinion, either raise taxes or cut services. You may have some things to say about this yourself. You can join guest host Julie Rose Monday at 9.
Well, On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. An ex-Bush official is in line to head the FBI. Michelle Bachmann says she won't seek re-election, and consumer confidence is the highest in 5 years.
Join us for the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about character education and character development with Deborah Kaslick, Director of Arts, Health, PE, and Curriculum Support for CMS, Dr. Deborah Acker, Assistant Director of the General Hugh Shelton Leadership Center at North Carolina State University. She joins us by phone, and also with us in the studio, Susan Grabowski, founder of Young Elites, which we'll continue to talk about as well. The Charlotte Mecklenburg School approach is to partner, and this is a quote I think from your literature, is to partner with parents and the community to foster honest, responsible, and caring students. I'm just curious why it's necessary to partner with parents, because if the parents aren't teaching these qualities at home, are they likely to join you in that effort? And if they are teaching, if they are the kind of people who are teaching these qualities, do they need your help?
Well, you know, maybe they don't, you know, maybe they do, you know, so, you know, we're going to provide that support, you know, and a unified strategy to bring everybody together around the same, you know, around the same elements to think about, you know, how caring about one another can drive a very positive learning environment and also positive community. You know, a lot of the issues that we see in the schools are coming from the community. So, you know, by embracing the community mm-hmm. and the parents in becoming part of the solution, you know, then we have strengthened our workforce to get it done for our young people.
And have you found that the parents come? Do they come to these sessions willingly, or are they supposed to come to the sessions, or do you just communicate via email and notes home?
Across the board, mm-hmm. you know, we've had some town hall meetings, you know, that have driven the concept. Everybody's starting to really jump on board with the Making It Better initiative. And, you know, and as we, you know, as we start looking at this as a global aspect and approaching it globally, you know, from all aspects through curriculum, through social development, through sports, you know, through intramurals, through physical education, through health concepts, then, you know, I think we're going to strengthen how we can promote great values within our students.
So these are not specific daily classes or weekly classes in character. You're trying to sprinkle these principles throughout the curriculum.
Correct.
Which means the teachers have to be incredibly well-versed.
Correct.
How do you do it? I mean, do they point that out in a classroom lesson? Do they point it out by example, through mentoring? How is it done?
All of the above. The curriculum, most subject area curriculums have components of character built right into them, you know, values, social studies in particular, health, you know, with risk behaviors, critical thinking skills, conflict resolution, same with physical education.
Are these some of the same things that you do with the young women in your program at Young Elites?
Or? Yeah, but with steroids, basically. I mean, and I understand what Deb's up against. I mean, the success rate is that if parents are involved and encouraging at home, yes, that all, it's so much better. But we, as Young Elites, take it under our, we're under the impression that these girls are coming and they're solely doing it. We don't have any parent involvement. And the understanding is that we are filling and building them as an individual solely without a parent involvement. And so we are basically, you know, setting up a schedule that will, from service, which is so important, but it's a culture and a lifestyle to teach them, and we bring in all experts to fill them. And we don't have any we don't leave any stone unturned, basically. And so they have an intensive week of being filled. And we know that even from keeping a notebook, we teach them exactly how it's going to be done so that they can take that home and use it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we work it.
And again, ELITES is an acronym, and it stands mm-hmm. for Excellence, Leadership, Initiative, Tenacity,
and Execution.
It's not about the word elite, although that's what you hope to lead to. You don't want to be elitist, but you want to be, you want to encourage young people, young women particularly, to rise to the top. Dr. Acker, you also obviously deal with leadership and with ethical decision-making and integrity as a leader, along with other elements. How do you develop ethical decision-making skills?
Well, I mean, really, our program, kind of along with what the young elites do, I would agree, it's pretty intense week where we don't just talk about leadership. Everything that we do is a process, and so the topic that we bring to the table is all experiential, and we place the youth into leadership roles and responsibilities throughout the week. But they're also heavily involved in how we do the curriculum. It's all question-oriented to them, where they're identifying and owning what the theories, what the practices are that we're trying to, so they're able to make those connections between what we're trying to teach them around styles of leadership or how you motivate others as a leader or integrity, and really challenging them on their current view of thinking. And it's not just us, it's their peers. And so we have a reflection component with every curriculum and daily that our staff do with them, that they're identifying, they're examining, and then they're also articulate learning. What are they learning from it, and how are they going to apply it within the week, but also how are they going to apply it in the future? And so we're trying to make those applications for them constantly. And so one of the things when we're talking about ethical decisions and integrity, one of the pieces that we work from is Josephson's national survey on youth on how they make decisions. And really, it's interesting. We do a four corners type activity where we have the youth, you know, decide, you know, do they agree with it? Do they not agree with it? And it really goes along with the percentages are the same as it is nationally. And I just really challenge them on their thinking. But if they want trust, if they want a personal relationship to, you know, trust them, but then also others trust them as well, then they need to think about, well, you can't, you know, what is a lie? You know, there is no small lie versus cheating on a test. Well, if your most personal relationships are your parents, potentially, depending on the family situation, but a good friend, yet you're going to be less likely to, and no offense to teachers out there, because my mother was a teacher and we're all educators, but if you're going to be less likely to lie to a teacher because it has a grade attached to it versus a personal relationship like a parent or a guardian, then that is the process that you are starting to make decisions on, which can impact later in life. And so we don't like, you know, hammer them in the essence of your thinking is bad, but we just kind of leave things out for them to have them think about, you know, what are the choices you're making today? How is that going to impact you in the future? Because how you do respond to things today is going to align things in the future.
This comes, go ahead.
Well, and to actually extend on that a little bit is to say, like, something that we would do would be to put them into debate. And so we'd have legal people come in and we'd break them out and teach them debating. And through that, that's critical thinking. And then they learn it. Whether they thought they'd ever want to debate or not isn't the point anymore. The point is that they've learned now how to make the critical thinking. And then they'd sit there and later on say, well, I know now how to get all the information. And whether it's what I would have decided or not, I'm going to make the best decision.
A lot of this boils down to something very basic. Good or bad, right or wrong. And am I hearing that a lot of these kids don't have that basic concept under their belts?
It's not taught. The skills aren't taught. And it's a funding thing. It really is. And the fact that our young elites is free is unheard of. It's unheard of.
It's not taught in the home. It's not taught in the school. It's not taught through the stories that first graders read or kindergartners have read to them.
I think social media has changed a lot. I think that it's kind of making it skip a beat. And so we need to step back and bring it back. It's kind of old school stuff.
Deborah?
We do drive a lot of it, you know, in through you know, through stories, through reading, through applications that actually tie back into, you know, Common Core, the literacy standards, the integration properties, like I mentioned before with social studies, physical education and health. But some of these have some of these courses have taken back seats to core classes, you know. So we are driving it through every content area that we have.
Some people would say that this is the result of the secularization of our society and the diminishing influence of religion, and some others would say that you cannot be a moral person and therefore operate under the principles of right versus wrong without a strong religious background. Do you believe that's true?
I don't know so much if it's religion, but I think it's intrinsic. The whole intrinsic value piece. You have to want to care, mm-hmm. and you have to have experienced how that feels. So if I'm placed in a situation or I read a story about something I can relate to, like The Skin I'm In or Wander, which are two books that we use within health and literacy. Another one is Fat Boy Chronicles that brings about issues and, you know, that empathy, caring piece, so that we can have those discussions in classrooms. We can write about them, you know, and we can talk about the importance of those. One of the things that drives that is the relationships that students develop with teachers, mm-hmm. which is an integral component of that.
I actually read yesterday that one of the key influencers of children, no matter what their socioeconomic background is finding one teacher mm-hmm. at one time mm-hmm. in their life.
Correct.
Who takes an interest, has an impact on them, who they can look up to, who mentors them, even if it's just simply being kind to that child.
Mm-hmm.
That seems relatively astounding that it could take one teacher one time in a person's mm-hmm. life to make mm-hmm. all the difference in the mm-hmm. world.
And sometimes it could be as little as one word.
Yep. And in this program at Young Elites, we found last year just with the 30 girls that a couple of them said that this program changed their life. And we were in a school setting. We use a school to, you know, for the program. And basically that was taking the place of some kind of adult was changing their life. We were at the crossroad in their life.
What kind of people come to your program at the Shelton Leadership Center, Deborah? Who are they and how do they come to be there?
Ironically, it's funny. At the beginning of the week, General Shelton can ask the participants how many of you wanted to participate in this program, because a lot of people, like young people, don't really like raise their hand to go to a leadership program for a week. But I you would say maybe one or two of them might raise their hand. And we're knowing that. So a lot of times it is individuals, whether it's a parent, whether it is someone who they work with and as a coach or band or whatever, it's an adult who has seen potential in them or see that they, if they just had a little bit more confidence in themselves, the potential they would see as a young person to be able to go beyond. And so we get a great variety of students, and we don't want students who are just in JROTC. We have students from, you know, like I said, band captains of the football team or basketball team or volleyball team. And I would say we get those that have never been in an organization to those who are the top leaders. And really what we focus on and we place them into teams for the week where they're going to be challenged within themselves, but, you know, we're not going to put someone who is the captain with someone who's never been in an organization before. We want them to feel comfortable enough to step outside their comfort zone and really challenge themselves. And so, you know, I would say that we have people from across the state as well as people nationally and internationally come to our programs throughout the summer. And I think it's really been more of a word of mouth or those who are going to one of the colleges that they are at that they just want to have that experience on that college campus.
Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools says that their program promotes a positive school climate where students are more polite, honest, and respectful. How quickly does that begin to happen once these kids are exposed to these principles, some of whom have never been exposed to these principles? How quickly does it take?
Depending on individual experience, but the more that we can put children into those environments and experience it, the quicker it will happen.
And this has been going on since 2000. The state law, at least, has been in place since 2001. Have you? Right. Is there any way to measure the impact that this has had? Because we still hear about problems in schools with behavior and lack of respect for teachers and for each other. We still hear about those problems. So what kind of an impact have you had? Can you measure it?
It's not something that's easily measured because it's an affective type of element that's really hard to isolate. You can get at it by asking students in schools about their environment, asking the teachers, the climate, how the culture of the school, what it feels like. Do I feel safe in school? Mm-hmm. Do I like coming to school? Does it make me happy to be here? Is it fun? Is it invigorating? Those kinds of things. Do I enjoy the rigor? Do I enjoy the challenges that are presented to me every day? So as we present those positive cultures within the schools, the students come on board rather quickly.
It might seem easier to a young person to ignore right and wrong, good or bad, and do what they want to do as opposed to what they should do. What are the stakes for them to change their behavior? How do you make them understand the stakes of changing their behavior?
I don't believe that, a lot of them have that. I think, the large majority of students do want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes they are challenged with, a situation where they make a wrong choice. But that's part of education. If we don't make mistakes and learn from those mistakes, then, we're not going to move ahead at all. So experience is, the teacher.
Ron in Matthews emails, scientific studies like the marshmallow experiment with children where one child gets one marshmallow now, but if they wait 10 minutes, they get two marshmallows, have shown that self-control at a young age is a better predictor of future success in terms of health, status, and financial stability than IQ. And one obvious dimension is the internal ability to manage the need for instant gratification. The studies have also shown that self-control can be taught at any age, but more easily with young people. Much of our current societal pressures caters to instant gratification. Is self-control a major component of the current teaching of character? And Dr. Acker, we have 30 seconds, but I heard you make a comment on that, a verbal comment on that. So answer that question.
I think it really has to go back to experience, but it's also about consequence. And, within our program, our students are responsible for planning and implementing night activities. They have to come up with the resources. If they don't ask for the resources, no one else gets them. And so I think, having the impact of understanding consequence and then,
Let me stop you there because we'll have to go to a break. Okay. We'll come right back and finish. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Northeastern University Charlotte, now offering the Charlotte region more globally focused and industry-aligned degrees in science, technology, and engineering. Details at northeastern.edu/Charlotte. It's the Friday News Roundup in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the National Hour First. Among the stories they'll be talking about, the ex-Bush official in line now to head the FBI, Michelle Bachmann saying she won't seek re-election, and consumer confidence being the highest in 5 years. That's it at 10 o'clock, and of course the International Hour comes your way at 11. If you'd like to join our conversation about character education, about character development, WFAE.org is a good place to start. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks or 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE. We're coming right back.
They say context is everything. At All Things Considered, we take the time to put things in their proper place, delving into the why and the how of a story, not just the who, what, and where. We pinpoint what's truly important and grasp the ideas that bring the news into focus. I'm Melissa Block. Join us every afternoon for All Things Considered from NPR News, because the facts matter.
From 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about character development, character education with Deborah Kaslick, Director of Arts, Health, PE, and Curriculum Support for Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, Susan Grabowski, founder of Young Elites, and Dr. Debbie Acker, who is Assistant Director of the General Hugh Shelton Leadership Center at North Carolina State University. I had to interrupt you in the middle of responding to an email or talking about self-control being part of character education. So I'll let you finish what you were saying, Dr. Acker.
Now, again, I think it just really has to do with understanding consequences when you're making your decisions. And so if they're experiencing it, if they're practicing it, just like it was mentioned, then they make those connections. And so I think the earlier, I think there are principles that can be taught that later on, there are a lot of things that we, you know, have them go through during that week, but it could be 2 weeks or it could be 2 years later that all of a sudden they make that connection and it comes back to them of why this is important. And so I think as educators, we can't be dependent on what our results are going to be within that day or that week, but we have to trust that if we believe in what we're doing and how we're doing it, that at some point, if people choose to accept, then they will make those connections.
We live in a me society where we celebrate me and where everybody wants to be famous. And you can look at YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and see that quite demonstrably. But at CMS, you stress having a passion for the public good. That's putting somebody else over me. How does that go over with these young people? Do they just look at you like, are you nuts?
No, once they experience it, like I said, they really endear it, you know, because, it's that intrinsic feeling of caring, mm-hmm. You know, it really drives them from the heart. You know, once we can really impact the heart of the matter, then the students are the ones that are telling us what needs to be done. You know, so the initiative itself is student empowered. Mm-hmm. You know, they're identifying the needs and what they want to do and change in their schools, identifying what the climate is and, you know, how they can impact it.
And Dr. Acker, you teach something along those lines, passion for the public good, but I think you refer to it as social responsibility at NC State. So how do you teach these young people to apply that to everyday life?
Absolutely. Well, during the week, they actually participate in a service project. And so our intent is we provide them what the need of the agency is for that day, that project, but then they are the ones who kind of figure out how they're going to make that happen. And so they really have that empowerment that was just mentioned to really impact a community. But they hear about what the community's mission is, their vision, their need. They might be able to interact with those that are a part of that agency. And then we process with them about, you know, what that day was and how they can go back into their communities. And not just within their, local communities, but how do they go back to their schools? You know, if they have attached to what they experienced, how could they then take that back to an organization? And so, you know, social responsibility and compassion are really two things that, at the end of the week, after they get through honesty and integrity, it really, you know, gets to the heart, as mentioned, and then they're able to make those connections. Because as a leader, you have to know what you're passionate about, and if you're passionate about something, then you can really help others and inspire others to want to follow you and to engage in you and enable others to be a part of a bigger thing.
CMS may do this, but I know that Young Elites, and again, Elites is Excellence, Leadership, Initiative, Tenacity, and Execution. Young Elites and the Shelton program at North Carolina State University also talk about the importance of being open-minded. Is that part of the CMS?
Absolutely.
How is that a character development trait?
I think you have to be open-minded to be able to take in experiences. Also, to be able to recognize consequences, as Debbie had said, so that it becomes more of a restorative process rather than a punitive process.
And I think it goes along with diversity in which we talk about, and not just talking, you know, our appearance of diversity, but we go through an assimilation experience around diversity and really getting them to see that it's more than the eye and what you see, but it's about experience. So you're making those connections so that you're not making prejudgments about others, but we try to help them understand to value people's diversity and being open-minded. And, you know, we can agree to disagree. And that's what we try to equip our students, saying, you know, it's good to have opinions from others because that's where creativity comes. That's where innovation comes.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and that's where the synergy comes for wanting to do something even greater.
And it goes back to my debate, you know, saying that to you is teaching them to hear all sides. And even if it wouldn't have been what they would say they do, but they know it's the right thing to do, they would take the other side because it's the best for everyone.
But we live in this mm-hmm. black and white society today where there doesn't seem to be much room for common ground in between the left and the right, black and the white, up and the down, left and the right. You know, we just don't seem to be there at this moment. So can you be a person of good character mm-hmm. and still be closed-minded on some issues, have very strongly held beliefs that you will not compromise?
Well, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it can be taught to have that. It can be taught to be open-minded, hear all sides, but still stand on your beliefs. It can be taught. Those skills can be taught to still be your own person, follow your own moral compass, and still understand, have skills to hear the world and navigate through the world and to lead the world.
Okay.
Yes.
Let me bring a caller into this conversation. Joe in Monroe, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I just saw the tweet about a moral lesson from childhood. I have a real quick one I just wanted to mention. When I was a little kid, my friend and I had a BB gun. We were sort of going around shooting and whatever, and he actually fired the shot that broke my uncle's windshield. But I got punished for it, and he didn't get anything. And I always remembered this, how unjust I thought this was as a child. But in retrospect now, I see the sort of character lesson my parents were trying to teach about accountability and responsibility, and I think in some ways character is not just an individualist kind of association, but it involves others in our community as well. And so, anyway, though I thought it was unjust as a child, I sort of respect the lesson as an adult.
Right,
perfect example.
Mm-hmm. You make a good point about that peer development also. You know, where it can be a negative experience, and it also can be a very positive experience. You know, to have peers promote you, to stop you from doing something, but at the same time, having you suffer the consequences for something they did.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Joe. I appreciate it. Email from Nick here. I once saw a documentary where the focus on child development in Japan starts very young, and many children are enrolled in two schools at the same time up until college. In college, however, they party and barely get by. But once they graduate, corporations look at what they did before college and then, according to their youthful education, hire and train them in their business. About their business. The whole process is devoted to the benefit of society, and from all indications, the system produces very productive people. Any comment on that? You don't have to comment. I'm just asking if there's any comment.
I know nothing about that.
Okay. speaking of which, because I guess if we just started at CMS in 2001 with a dedicated program toward this, and obviously other public school educators have seen the need to start private enterprises that deal with leadership and character development. Are businesses doing this themselves? Are they taking new employees and teaching them about character and integrity and ethical decision-making? Or is that something that they just hope you come in with and let you sink or swim with?
No, I believe that's happening. I don't know to what extent, but I've fished out there and looked some of that up, and yes, it's happening. You can pay for that. Yeah, it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. We our board of advisors is made up of CEOs and such, and We are just, I've just had a focus group with some business leaders in the community in Raleigh, and one of the things that they're missing and they're seeing a gap in is disciplined decision making, because they're seeing graduates that they are having come in with wanting all the information, as well as that entitlement side of things. And so they're not able to really work in teams. The soft skills are missing. And so they're actually coming to us going, you know, what are things that within the college experiences that can be incorporated to assist in this? Because they're not knowing how to come up with that, create, you know, you have your Googles, you have those different organizations that allow for that innovation and that creativity, but it's a mindset or a skill that is missing that they're wanting higher ed to be able to assist with as well before getting into the situation.
Right, and that's why we're driving that too in K-12 education, mm-hmm. is driving that, you know, exact component to develop those soft skills. You know, along with the skills that they need, so that when they do graduate, that they are career ready, or they are ready to go on to college.
Right.
And those soft skills, I laugh at that because it's a term I had to be educated on. They're not, to me, soft skills. They're the biggest, best skills you should have, and soft skills, to me, it diminishes what they really should be called. So I learned that.
The Young Elites, which you founded, is actually something that your family is involved in, and your family has contributed a substantial amount of money.
To my parents,
a substantial amount of money.
My husband and I are behind it a million times.
Why is this so important to you personal?
Okay, and again, Jennifer Shiley and I did co-found this, and we've written this, so I don't want to take that away either. But why? Tell me again why.
Why you're so personally attuned to this?
I think
so personally, you find it so important that you would invest so much money in this yourself.
I think a lot of things are timing, and it's the right time. It's the right time in my life. I can devote a lot of time to it. I can devote freely. My children are grown. My last one's going off to college, and I have a lot to bring to the table. I have a lot. And what I can't bring, I surround myself with experts, and they mentor me into it. And so with that, I think that it's right and it's worthy. And culturally, it's relevant. And so it's like everything, the stars are aligning, and so I'm going to go for it.
And they say that we're moving more and more into an entrepreneurial society where we're not going to be working for big corporations. We're going to be starting businesses of our own.
So my husband and I come out of that. We already are.
So does this make it even more important when you have not General Electric and General Motors employing tens of thousands of people versus tens of thousands of people employing themselves?
Right.
Does it make it even more important to have these skills?
Yes, because we really understand that. So firsthand, I understand that. So I can actually come from that place and then work from that place. So yes, that's a big part of it too.
Okay. An email from Nate. I don't believe character can be taught in a classroom. As a CMS student, I had quite a lot of character development classes in my elementary through high school. And through personal experience, none of my classmates nor myself ever had a second thought about cheating on a test or skipping class as long as the rest of our friends were doing it too. I think character is more a product of the environment we're in rather than the classes we take. That comes back to the carrot and the stick that I talked about and the fact that some people believe you cannot be a moral person, and character is about being a moral person unless you have a strong religious background where you believe in eternal damnation, where you have the stick hanging over your head if you don't do the right thing and the reward of heaven if you do. So in the absence of that, how do you get people to believe that it's the right thing, the good thing? It'll make you feel better if you do the right thing.
I think that's an individual kind of thing. I think we're going to get it from different ways, just as the writer has stated, you know, that they didn't think that they got it. But there were messages along the way throughout those classes that they internalized as well. But their personal experiences allowed them to feel that humanity was important to them.
All three of these programs deal with teaching ethical behavior, mm-hmm. which is very important. But how do you teach that? What are the principles that you rely on to teach ethics?
Sometimes I think, you know, nowadays it's a subtlety. You know, Manny Ohomi is part of our service, and he's Samaritan's Feet, and he's faithful. He's a Christian, and when he comes in and talks, he doesn't hide the fact that he is. And we're not saying we're a Christian-based organization, but we're also not going to sit there and say that you can't be when you come, or Manny can't speak about it when he comes. So I think that you just kind of go with it, and that's the part of culturally we have to just maybe say, maybe we can't wave the flag, but maybe we don't have to hide the flag. And I'm not sure, you know, always how to handle that, but I think it's just about being real and honest and letting everyone speak. And that's part of what we're going to do in our program. So okay. That's a piece of it.
I think it's part of the part of the diversity piece as well.
It is diversity.
You know, and the understanding of where different people are coming from. You know, and respecting that component, mm-hmm. and then being inclusive mm-hmm. of all.
Go ahead.
And I think, I mean, going along with being real, I think that's one of the things that, you know, it's, and even what the writer spoke about, it's the environment. And so as, you know, role models, we need to set the example of what an environment should be. And so, you know, even in my research, it's more about, you know, how you set the environment up, the atmosphere, what is expected or can be expected or appreciated.
And let me stop you there because we are out of time. Dr. Deborah Acker, Assistant Director of the General Hugh Shelton Leadership Center at NC State, Susan Grabowski, founder of Young Elites, and Deborah Kaslick, Director of Arts, Health, Public, Physical Education, Curriculum Support for CMS.